We are live from the Cadillac Club on a big Thursday as the Mets get set to take on the Atlanta Braves. Evan and Tiki here till 6:30, and joining us right now, the man that I tried to get a long-term contract. I did everything I could with the beard, but he is here, and hopefully will be here forever, the great Pete Alonso. Pete, thank you very much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being here. So what do you think so far of your season? You got off to an unbelievable start. Obviously, the team struggles recently. Give me your kind of impression on what you've done so far this year.
Personally, I'm very, very pleased, and I think the biggest thing I'm really the most stoked about is just the consistency, and this is, for me, something that I really worked hard on in the off season. But once you get into the daily fight, the daily grind of the season, you got to hold on to the discipline, hold on to like the little details in order to keep continuing to compound in good days. So for me, just stoked about the consistency.
What was the biggest difference between previous years and this one, preparation-wise, that allowed you to get off to the start you got off to?
I think mechanically last year, like looking at the season as a whole, I just wasn't necessarily my best self every single day. And sometimes it's not about really – I don't know. It's like you do all the work, and then like you're so over focused and like you're too zoomed in, and then once like kind of the playoffs came around, it's like, oh, this it just clicked. And then it's like I kind of look back, and it's like, okay, I want to be this guy, this version of myself every single day. Because like when I look at the playoffs, it's like, wow, that's really in a sense of like who I think I should be, who I think I am as a ball player. And it's like, how do we repeat that every single day? So the workout, the activations, and everything, the cage work, everything is like, how do we keep replicating that? Or in the long, it's a long season, 162 right. games, but how can I replicate
now,
that?
Now, how hard is that? Because, look, as a football player, we're playing once a week. And right. then we get a bye week in the middle of the season. So it never feels like I was overwhelmed by having to perform. How hard or disciplined does that take to do it every single day?
I mean, there's no secret sauce, but it's the repetitiveness. Mm-hmm. It's like it's in the baseball season that's so difficult. It's like it's actually funny because when I'm like, man, Tiki's going to be on the show. Sick. So if I had to explain like 2 weeks of games, so that's 14 games, that's equivalent to one NFL game.
Right.
Which is if you put that into perspective, it's like,
it's a lot of baseball.
But if you're like in an NFL season, like how many times did you guys end up perfect?
Yeah, very few.
So it's like if you lose one right. game, it's like, okay, we'll bounce back next week. Or right. if we get a bye week, okay, we can regroup and then we'll get back at it. But baseball, it's like 14 games in the baseball season is equivalent to one
right.
game.
Right, so basically you guys just had a week of – you just lost one game.
If
this was
terms.
Football.
Yes.
So how did you come out – how do you think about trying to come out of this as a team? Not you individually, but as a
By
team.
By the way, before you continue, yeah. I don't think you understand – you saying that means so much to me. I had a fight with my former co-host yeah. for 2 weeks when I tried to explain, hey, baseball, you know, every game is football. It's like 2 weeks. And he thought I was an idiot. So hearing you on WFA and explain the baseball football equivalence.
It's just a way to relate, Evan.
Thank you. No, no. I made the point for 2 years. I got right. yelled at. Now Pete's made it. Thank you, Pete. Now please continue your question. I apologize.
Now you
that just
me
meant a
track.
Lot to me. The team has been struggling
right,
lately.
They struggled. So you basically lost the game in football terms, but you're starting to turn it around because you won a game last night and it was pretty convincing fashion. But as a team, how do you get through that 2 week period where you're just, man, we suck today?
Well,
or we suck for the last week. How do you get through that?
Well, how you get through it is like you continue to trust in the group. I mean, the talent's undeniable. The group's chemistry, togetherness, the way that we're gelled, the way that we've mm-hmm. stuck together this entire time, it's been great. So, I mean, yes, the past couple weeks haven't been the best, for sure. Yeah, no doubt. But if you look at our overall record, it's like if you were to tell us, like, hey, this is your record. Like, if we were to tell every single person, like, hey, this is what the Mets' record's going to be halfway through the season, you're going to be like, okay, great, awesome, good. Good thumbs up, that's good. But I think for us, it's like we know that there's a lot more meat on the bone left for us, and what we can accomplish is literally, like, the expectations are sky high, but, like, sometimes you need to get punched in the mouth. And for us, like, that's what happened, and we want to keep continuing to respond every single day and not take any little moment for granted.
Speaking of being punched in the mouth, and I can't blame you for 1999, you aren't here. Why do the Braves always punch the Mets in the mouth? Going back to 22, going back to this season, why is it always them who are doing the punching?
So no one is ever going to remember. I always hear Braves, Braves, Braves. Braves were a really good team. But there was a week that we played two teams. So the Washington Nationals, I think, won maybe 70 games or less. They won 2 out of 3 against us at home. And then the Chicago Cubs won 73-ish games, and then they swept us.
Yeah.
So, okay, the Braves, phenomenal team. Like, and if we look back at the scores, it's like, okay, those are like really, really good baseball teams. And it's like, you know what? Sometimes when you get beat, you have to tip your cap. But there's games where, like, hey, maybe against a lackluster team, like,
you're talking about 22. Like, you look at those games more than the Brave games. Is 100%.
100%. And then also, I remember this one game in Oakland, Jacob DeGrom.
Jake got bombed. Remember that? Like, which is rare.
No doubt. And it's like, there's so many games where it's like you look back and it's like, I'm not looking at necessarily the Atlanta ones because those are coin flip. Two heavyweight teams going head-to-head. Anything can happen.
So there's nothing here with the Braves. It's not like there's an intimidation factor or there's something about that building, because even the series last week, maybe it's a slump, but overall, the Braves have had more success against you guys than anybody. You don't think in that room there's any kind of thing about Atlanta and who's in that room and who that team is?
I mean, they got great talent, but again, like, I don't think it's anything more than what it is. Again, when you go against good teams, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I mean, it's legitimately a coin flip, but when you go against lesser opponents, like, for example, I look back in 22 against those two teams, it's like we could have picked up – if we split the series at home, we're champagne showering and hosting and hosting a DS series as opposed to a wild card. So, or even if we win one more game, even if we lost against the Cubs, lost the series instead of get swept – I mean, there's little things throughout the year. It's like, oh, if we didn't give away here in June. Oh, if we didn't give away here in April. When something – we didn't play clean baseball, but sometimes you get beat.
Right. That's got to be mind-numbing to think about a game making that big of a difference.
It happens all the time. Look at last year.
Of course.
Look at last year.
I would agree with you if it wasn't always the Braves. If it wasn't always them.
Yeah, but I think
I'd say, sure, you're right. It's a coin flip.
But
they're good.
You said this yesterday, and you're absolutely right.
I said something right yesterday? What was that?
You did. You said it's circumstance, in a sense, because of who you faced. Right? Yeah. You had Schwellenbach, and you had Strider for four of these games. Right? You've lost five of them. You've had two of their best pitchers twice. So, I mean, some of it is circumstance, and I think that's how you have to look at it.
Right? No,
they have great players as well.
I mean, yeah, like, there are starters, and then also, like, Sale, like, he had an absolutely spectacular outing, and he had his Cy Young stuff. Like, he was unbelievable. So, like, and as an offense where not all of us were clicking at the right time, where it's like, hey, like, big league pitching, like elite big league pitching, is gonna
let me ask you something about that
happen.
Because Evan and I've talked about this a couple of times, how it feels like the pitching early in the season was so dominant. I mean, you lead in the league in ERA, really team ERA, just including the bullpen, and it felt like, man, the pitching is carrying this team. I know Juan Soto's not hitting, Pete's doing great, but eventually the bats are going to have to wake up. The bats are going to have to take their cues pitching kind of falls off a little bit. Do you guys think about that? Like, is there a relationship between, man, he's struggling today, we got to go get some hits?
Well, we got to put up runs every day. Because no matter who we're facing, it can be – I mean, it's the big leagues. Anyone can go get you at any single time. So no matter who we're facing, like, it could be anybody. And they're in the big leagues for a reason, because they got the best stuff in the world. Mm-hmm. So, we're motivated to score runs every single day.
Do you think you're getting the same pitches to hit over the last 3 weeks as you got earlier this season?
For me, I think that I think the league is like bearing down a little bit more. Like, I've noticed a lot more pitches on the pitcher's pitches on the corners, or just off, or just on the corner. So it's just a matter about not sticking to the middle of the plate and capitalizing on mistakes when they do.
But it's also, like, maybe it's because I'm the official defender of Pete Alonso on WFN. I don't know if you know that. But my excuse has been, I don't want to knock your teammates too much. I'll do it. You don't have to say it. You got crap behind you. No one's protecting you, which is why in spring training I said, Pete, they should hit you second. Let Soto hit behind you. Don't you think you would benefit from getting a little bit more protection? No offense to McNeil. He's fine, whatever. But don't you think it would benefit you to get a little bit more protection in your lineup and that my idea was right and you should bat second ahead of Juan Soto?
Well, I mean, I think Jeff has got over a 900 OPS from the second half on. So, like, Jeff's been doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, regardless of where I'm at in the lineup, like, for me, they don't want to miss over the plate because it's like, okay. Like, there's, like, for us, it's like, okay. Like, me and Juan, no matter where we're at in the lineup, like, they're going to be like, okay, we're not going to allow these guys to put the ball in play because these guys can leave in the park at any time. Like, Francisco's the same way. When Nemo is hitting the ball like the way he has been, when he's hitting the ball, it's hit hard and far. So it's just how the game is. It's like no pitcher wants to just lay something in the zone because, like, we have a deep lineup where, like, if the ball's hit put in play, it's put in play hard, chances are it's probably going to go over the wall.
So just so you know, Evan asked that exact question of Mindy at the beginning of the season, and he looked at him like he had three heads.
Yeah, he didn't like my idea.
He said no flat out.
Yeah. Do you remember what you said? You said you wanted to lead off. That's what you said.
I'd say, hey, hey.
Have you ever led off in your life?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was like AAU game. Somebody forgot their jersey, and then their parents like, went
home. And how did you do?
Oh, it was great. I got a first pitch heater and whacked a double. It was great.
I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe you should lead off.
First pitch heater right there.
Hey, it's team great. Slumps, you may try right. something
well,
like that.
Well, you won't try what Tommy suggested yesterday. Tommy had this wacky idea yesterday to play zone offense with the Mets lineup. So that means either you, Lindor, or Juan Soto hitting leadoff. One of the other two hitting fourth, and the other last one hitting eighth or seventh.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea, Pete. I know.
Is that a terrible idea as everybody thought it was yesterday, or is there some merit to it? Nobody would have thought that, like, Shohei Ohtani would be leading off.
Now, Pete, before you answer, I'm Tommy. Yeah. So, just know before you answer. So, when Evan says he hates it, he means he secretly likes it.
No, I don't.
Tiki loved the idea yesterday.
I was like, why not?
You just said you led off before, and this isn't knocking anybody. I'm positive, Tommy. It's just about spreading out. It's not knocking anyone. It's just about seeking a problem and finding a solution.
It sounded different when he was.
I'm an idea
Pete
man.
Pete, you're allowed to punch him if you want.
I thrive on enthusiasm, Pete. Come on. He's speechless. Is that a good thing?
No.
Oh, damn.
I have no words.
No words?
No words.
It's that dumb.
That's never been suggested, ever.
Maybe just take a little time. Can you pass it along to Mendy for me? Just say, there's this idea. You spread the four best hitters out throughout the lineup. That way, every inning, you have one of your best hitters.
It's not going to work,
you
Tommy.
You get to lead off.
You got to give this one up. You got to pass this one up.
Just give him a time to think.
No.
No? Not even a maybe?
That's yeah, hard no.
Hard no. Thank you very much. We're talking to Pete Alonso from the Cadillac Club as the Mets get set to take on the Atlanta Braves. The last few games, you have made incredible plays. You made a diving play the other night, perfect throw to the pitcher covering. For that little stretch where you had the miscue throws, including the one to Senga, was it ever getting mental or was it just a defensive slump? How do you explain what was going on for that stretch?
I mean, for me, the one in New York, I mean, I just zoot it, you know, and sometimes it happens. I probably watched like every angle, like in slow motion. I'm like, yeah, my feet were set, my arm angle was good, and then I just zoot it,
right?
Which happens, unfortunately, and in that spot, it's going to be amplified, and yeah, I mean, that was a big moment. Just zoot a routine play. The one to Stanek, I think for me, I could have done a little bit better job of setting my feet. I didn't set my feet there. It's like, okay, that one, it's like, okay, could have set my feet. Senga, that was a tough play in the hole, and I just had to get it to him. He's an athletic guy. So I'm like, okay, get the ball to, like, his chest area, and then he made a hell of a play. But I think, yeah, it's just a matter about sticking to it, sticking to the routines, even though things didn't go right. a couple times, but again, you just stick to the routine, trust the work that you put in.
When he got hurt, you were emotionally broke up a little bit about it, looked like it on the field, but afterwards, his, at least from what we heard, his interpreter came and said he probably pulled it running over. Did that make a difference to you?
No. Because, I mean, just being involved and, like, knowing that kind of, like, just being involved in it, knowing that it wasn't a perfect throw, it's like, I just still feel, and also I feel bad because, like, last year he was grinding, grinding to get back healthy, and something similar happened where, like, he was back, and then he was hurt, and then he came back for the postseason, thankfully. But,
right.
Yeah, just from what he's been through at a personal level, like, being missing a ton of time last year with stuff, and then it's like, yeah, I just hate to see that for him.
But your confidence throwing to first base, all good right now?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Good. You are about to become a father in a few months.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Congrats, man.
Thank you.
Started breaking down, all right, if the baby's born on this date, I got to get on a plane here.
Wait, do you know the sex?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a boy.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
You can't tell us the name. That's bad luck.
No, I can't do that. Do you have a name?
I mean, we probably have a laundry list full.
Yes.
Like, we're probably just going to end up waiting till he gets here.
If you want to go with Evan, I approve it.
Oh, God, thank you.
He's going to say, it looks like me, Junior. He's Junior.
Have you thought about the arrival date and where it may fall on the calendar and everything around that?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. Yeah, hopefully we can thread a needle. I mean, hopefully. But again, like, there's a thing where it's like, okay, like, man makes plan, God laughs. So we'll see. We'll take it as it comes. I mean, the number one thing, I just want first and foremost, I want the safety of my wife and safety of the child. I mean, that's number 1A and 1B priority right there. So however the timing and whatever unfolds, like, I mean, it's going to work out. I have a firm believer that it's going to work out.
100%. Will you be a New York Met for life, Pete?
We'll see. I mean, I love it here. Like, everyone's treated my family so well. Like, the personnel has been, like, obviously awesome. Like, I've grown up here in this organization. Like, and for me, understanding the responsibility of playing in New York, like, I've embraced that. And also, like, last year, like, experiencing the playoffs and relishing in that experience here, like, that is, like, that is the pinnacle of big time baseball. And no, I love it. And I hope that the, you know what, here, call David, call Steve.
I'm trying.
If you want to negotiate here.
I heard Scott's right. Very tough to negotiate right. With, though. I don't know if I can.
Have you and Scott had that conversation about the opt out, or when will you have that conversation?
Whenever the season's over, however it unfolds. But for me,
so, like, no talks now.
No. I mean, we just play ball. Focus on winning. That's really it.
Yeah, you were teammates with this guy for a while. I'm just curious. If the Rangers continue to struggle and Jacob DeGrom becomes available, knowing him, do you think he'd waive his no-trade to come back to New York?
He almost fits a no-trade.
No, I know, but the Texas Rangers still stink. Do you, knowing him, because that's the real key to this, do you think he would want to come back? Be honest with me. I'll take it however you say it.
Well, I mean, he has – like, he's a guy who grew up here. But again, like, this is all, like, hypothetical stuff, and that's a decision that him and his family have to make, like, if that's something your organization does. But hopefully, I just want what's best for Jake. And I mean, right now he's pitching unbelievable. Like, there's nothing more that I want for him to win his third Cy Young and pretty much punch his ticket to Cooperstown. He's an unbelievable dude. And for him missing time with the surgery, like, and being away from the game, like, I think he's really motivated and really invigorated with this opportunity he has. And I just hope wherever he ends up, no matter what jersey, I just hope he keeps shoving. Like, because
he's been great.
Yeah. I mean, he's an unbelievable dude, great teammate, and yeah, I hope he wins a Cy Young this year.
When are you gonna break Darryl's home run record? You've hit one home run in 15 games. I say that with love. You know,
yes.
I love you.
No,
we got to
sure.
Get this thing going. When are we gonna break this record?
Whenever pitchers keep leaving the ball out over the plate. Whenever I get pitches to hit, you know what I'm saying?
And lay off the sliders off the plate.
You know what?
I've noticed you chasing recently.
Oh, you're a great coach.
Yeah.
Aren't I a good coach? Just lay off those
pitches. So good, especially, like, when they look right down the middle and so they're not. It's really okay. Got it. Thanks. Appreciate you,
Pete. Man, we love you.
Yeah.
I want you to be a Met for life.
Appreciate
and I want
that.
You to hit a home run tonight. All
thank
right.
You.
It'll make us feel like we contributed to it.
That's
all right.
Honestly, like one. That's it. If you want me to break the record, you're only saying, you can get one. That's crazy.
Fine. Hit me three tonight, Pete.
I haven't done it in a big league career yet. That's what I'm talking about.
There you go. That's what I want to see. Thank you, Pete. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Pete Alonso. Yeah, well, you know what? How about this?
Let's ask somebody who knows.
Ron Darling was a tremendous pitcher for many years in Major League Baseball. He's a great analyst now on SNY. I want to ask you a question. Hi, Ron. Thank you very much for coming.
Good to see you, man.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
I am
fantastic. You came in the middle of a debate.
We're having a baseball geek debate, and I think you, as someone who played it and is very smart, could help settle this.
I'm a little geeky, too. So
good.
As a pitcher, did you not like or like when a batter would swing at the first pitch? I'm a proponent of it. That you sometimes it's the best pitch that you will get. Soto hit his first home run on the first pitch. Apparently, the Mets statistics overall are not good swinging at the first pitch.
This is according to a caller. It's according to JR.
Yeah, I have to back up his numbers, actually. Your opinion on the opponent, or in this case, the Mets, swinging aggressively at the first pitch?
Well, I think I talked to Miguel Cabrera about this many years ago. You remember when it was really du jour of all the teams to see if they can see four or five, six pitches every at bat.
Right.
And Miguel Cabrera, who's by far the best hitter of his generation at that time, said, no, I swing at the first pitch. He's like, you just don't know what's going to be the pitch. The thing about Soto is that, I can't prove this, I think he sets up pitchers. I think he, the first time up against a young kid, Fuentes, he took a lot of pitches. Mm. He took one pitch right down the middle. And then the second time up, he's going to say, he's going to try to get ahead of me, and I'm going to see what I can do. He's just so great that he hits a home run.
So he's playing mind games.
Yes. And most
rope-a-dope.
Yes. And most people, of course, might hit a single or something. But for him, it's a home run.
So overall, is it a smart approach to be aggressive? Because that may be the best pitch you get.
Baseball is a strange game. You only have three strikes. Why would you waste any of them? Mm. So be aware or ready or alert for each and every pitch.
Mm. Interesting.
I mean, I don't know who won that then.
No, I think he's basically saying I'm right.
I don't know. I think he's saying great hitters. Look at what he's talking about. Miguel Cabrera.
That's right.
What about, I don't know, Ronnie Mauricio or Mark Vientos, any of these younger guys?
I think Tiki makes – I know what Tiki's saying. I get it. Is that if you're really highly skilled – you don't have to swing at the first pitch because I know I'm going to get another pitch to hit. I'm going to put it in play.
You have the confidence.
Yes. Right.
Before we even get into the Mets, I'm curious now, talking about you playing and being a baseball player, who is the toughest hitter you ever faced?
Well, it's a couple different ones because Tony Gwynn was impossible to get out.
Right.
I think he had a 450 off me, but he did against Smoltz.
Everybody.
Maddox, he had a 450 against everybody. I gave up two hits to Tony Gwynn, in fact, on balls that bounced.
Wow.
He had two balls that bounced for base hits, and he had the audacity.
Now, what do you mean bounce? I mean, threw a bounce?
I threw a ball, so it was going to bounce, so he would swing over it, and it bounced, and he hit it on the bounce like a tennis player for a single up the middle. So he had the audacity, and I say that because Tony was my great friend and one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. But I got into San Diego late one night before we were going to play the Padres in the 80s, and there was a TV show, and it was about Tony. And he had the audacity on the show to say I was one of the toughest pitchers he faced.
Right.
So I marched right to the cage the next day. I said, Tony, that's BS, man. Why would you do that? He goes, I don't know how I get hits off you. I don't see the ball.
Really?
And I was like, well, can you imagine if he saw it? He did 1,000. So he just he was so great. And then
he had 420 off of you.
Yeah,
can you imagine what he's hitting off everybody else?
And then Mike Schmidt and Jack Clark both. Mm-hmm. When they stood in the box, you know, there's no fear when you play sports, mm-hmm. Tiki. You know that.
Not.
But there is apprehension occasionally, you know, when you you know you're going to get the ball and you're going to a guy that's going to rip your head off if he's not blocked properly. So those two guys, when they got in the box, they took up the whole box. They were tremendously big men. In our day, you know, they didn't have the weight training like the guys have today. Mm. You know, they were the human muscle, too, and they just look like they're going to hit one right off your forehead.
I'll tell you something interesting. I think during the pandemic I did this. I was looking at Tony Gwynn's numbers against everybody, and it really is amazing. Like, no joke, 350 against every Hall of Famer. Everybody he faced more than 30 or 40 times he had a great average against, except for one person.
Wow.
Can you get – and I bring it up because you know him. He was your teammate.
Really?
There's one guy he could not hit.
Coney.
Doc Gooden.
Oh, really?
Yes, I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
Like, everyone, it's 370, 390, 420. And then with Doc, it was like 230.
But why would that be?
I think he caught Doc and right when Doc was Doc. Nobody hit Doc.
That is true. No one did.
So tell us about this this last little streak that the Mets have been on.
Yeah.
Negative, obviously, of course. But we had Pete on earlier, and he was talking about the football analogy. You know, it's 2 weeks is basically one game. Or 14 games is basically one game in the NFL. And I can imagine that the player has to look at it that way. But in real time, when you're on a whatever it was before they won last night, 10 of 11 losing, how do you mentally get yourself out of that?
It's a really, really great question. I think for baseball players, they're wired that way, that they know the long season is going to produce some streaky results. Ball players, all of them, whether they're the greatest of the greats, going to be Hall of Famers, or guys that are just the pedestrian players, they try to limit those bad streaks, because you know it's going to happen, and augment the good streaks. And the real Hall of Famers are able to do that. I think you have to play mind games with yourself. I think you have to say to yourself, you know what, I'm hitting the ball hard. I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Trying too hard, like in football, I feel, now I played a little high school football, college football, but, you know, you could try harder and there would be a result.
Right, it would work.
It would
work. You could hit that guy harder and he would feel it.
Exactly. And in baseball, it doesn't work that way, really. You know, even if you grunt throwing the ball into the batter, it doesn't mean he's not going to hit it hard. So I think you have to play mind games with yourself. And then you have to have an incredible coaching staff. You have to have incredible kind of strength with each other. Like, you have to trust each other that, okay, I know you're doing your job, I'm doing my job, let's just keep holding our end. At some point it's going to turn. And then you need a leader, and I think their manager he's authentic, he does an amazing job. And I say that because most of the managers I meet in when I'm traveling around baseball, when something like this happens, no one's fault. You know, this happens, you know, it's no big deal, we're going to get... You know, he calls it out. He says, like, we're terrible. You know, our bottom of the order is bad, or our bullpen is not getting any outs. Like, he ends up calling everybody out so no one's singled out.
Right. I'll ask you to single it out because we're analyzing
here. All right, okay.
Bottom of the order, bullpen, starters not going deep enough. That's all been kind of the problem during this streak. Which concerns you the most?
Boy, that's a good question. I'm not worried about the lineup. Because when everyone's in there, Vientos starting tomorrow night, depth of lineup is good. Bullpens always worry me because there's a real fungibility to bullpens. You know, guys can have a month that they're the greatest reliever you've ever seen, and then they have a hard time getting out. So I think you always need a lot of depth in the bullpen. But for me, and Philadelphia has the advantage in this way, every night they throw a guy out, even though they've lost a lot of games they haven't scored.
Right.
Every night they throw a guy out and go seven scoreless. That, to me, is always the strength of the game.
Right.
It limits the streaks you're talking about, Tiki, and puts you in a place each and every night. The Mets do that if Manaea and Senga are in there.
Right.
They'll have a harder time doing it if they're not.
Yeah, so, I mean, you bring up the starting rotations. The issue right now is that they're not getting deep, and so it's putting too much tax on the bullpen. Sean Manaea, we saw throwing a little bit out here. We don't know what the full status is, and when we heard Mindy, and I guess David Stearns also talking about this a couple of days ago, I'm a little bit confused because I know what loose bodies are. I used to have them in my knees from all the bone spurs and stuff like that. And it's fine, but it hurts. But I'm a football player.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a pitcher who's very, you know, sensitive right elbow or left elbow could really derail your season. What does it mean for Sean Manaea right now? Cortisone shot, obviously pain, inflammation, et cetera. What is it? When can we expect him to be right again?
Yeah, I had loose bodies, elbow issues from 87 on the rest of my career. And I had three different surgeries for it. Never missed any time, never went on the injured list, so I was very lucky. But it really comes to a point. There's a lot of issues, okay? If you're really young in your career, you might get the surgery and try to get it 100% and come back and then take your mark.
Right.
He's just signed a long-term contract. So I think it's incumbent on him, if he can go, he's going to have to suck it up with the pain and just go out there and pitch. Now, as far as you asking about the loose bodies, and some days you'll wake up and they're in the right position,
right,
and you feel great and you can throw as hard as you've ever thrown. And then some days you get up and you can't, like, towel your head off. It's a very strange kind of injury that comes and goes. But usually with the right medication, anti-inflammatories, things like that, it can get you through a season, certainly.
Yeah.
We're talking to Ron Darling. We're live from the Cadillac Club. Mets are playing the Braves tonight. David Peterson, up until his last start, was starting to feel like, wow, he could be the ace of this team. What has changed watching David Peterson early in his career to what he has become now?
Well, he's healthy. He's fully evolved as a pitcher. He always had a great competitive side. I always loved that about him. He always had enough stuff to be a big star in this league. I think his control is much better now than it ever was before, probably because of the health. And I just think he wants to be good. You know, half the battle of trying to be a really successful professional athlete, you got to want it, and you got to believe it. You got to believe, like, I'm good. And I think he's at that point right now. Now, he's had a couple of hiccups, but I'm a big believer in today's game. We love it occasionally when the guy goes for the complete game and we're just going nuts. It's so nice. But watch their starts after a complete game. They're always like a little iffy for the first couple of starts. So I'm sure he's ready for Pittsburgh tomorrow. He'll probably throw a jam tomorrow.
Doesn't that drive you crazy? Yeah. In your day, it was like, pitch a complete game. Oh, great, do it again. Now it's like, all right, just go get us five innings.
You
right?
know,
it's all good.
You know, every generation gets to play the game the way they want to play. You know, the other night, Acuna, you know, did his thing with his home run trot around the bases. Now, listen, if I were still playing, it would bother me. I'm not, so it doesn't bother me at all. You can play the game, you know, let the kids play. You can do whatever you want to do. I think as far as the complete game and all that stuff, you make an interesting and great point. If we ever want pitchers to get back or innings, you're going to have to incentivize it.
Yeah, we were just talking about
If you let the pitchers know that you are not going to get paid for a five-inning start, you're not going to get paid for 20 starts in a 110-inning year. You're going to get paid because you make your 30 starts. You're going to get paid because you make 180 innings. You will see a shift so quickly like you've never seen before, because the bottom line is, for all professional athletes, you're maxing out your earning time. Yeah. That's all it is.
Right. Now, when you say a shift, and I'm assuming approach is a big part of that.
Yeah.
So we had CC Sabathia on at Fanatics Fest.
Is he awesome or what?
Oh, he's fantastic. Awesome. One of our good friends. And when I was talking about the end of his career, when he lost some velocity, he had to learn how to pitch. Do you think that happens? I mean, the pitch clock has sped things up, so you're not seeing guys rear back and try to hit 97 every pitch. But now you got to learn how to pitch differently if what you're saying is going to happen, being incentivized to go deep into games.
Well, one, you're going to have to get rid of the arbitrary 100-pitch limit. You're going to have to go where a Paul Skenes should be 130 pitches.
Right.
And some other people maybe are closer to 100.
That's Sean's argument, by the way.
Well, he said it about Clark Schmidt.
That's Sean's argument. I'm just saying.
I think the hardest thing for like a guy like CeCe is that he was so great and such a macho pitcher that went right after guys, is that when you lose a little, you got to lose the macho. And that's hard to lose, man, because that's part of your whole strut.
Well, you know what he would do? He'd just hit you.
Yeah, exactly. He'd do whatever he wanted to do.
That's how he stayed macho.
What are you going to do? He's 6'8". I'm not going after him. But you have to lose that macho, and every time that you, in the past, would add, you have to subtract. Mm. And when that happens for the first time, you kind of feel bad.
Right.
It doesn't make you feel good. But when it becomes successful, then you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is what it's all about anyway. It's just supposed to be good.
I want to go back to Acuna because he ticked off a lot of Met fans as well.
He's
doing the Euro step. He's dancing. And we took calls throughout the day. The Mets should drill him. The Mets should really drill him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think they're going to drill him because most Met players are going to celebrate too if they hit a home run.
Yeah. Right.
Clay Holmes came up and in often and early. I didn't get the sense it was related, though. I got the sense it was, he's a tough hitter, and this is how you have to face him.
Right.
What was your sense on the up and into Acuna?
Yeah, you don't have to hit a hitter to give a message. Mm-hmm. And I think Clay Holmes delivered that message. And the message was this. It's, I understand your talent. I know how great you are. But don't get comfortable on my watch. I'm pitching tonight. don't get comfortable. Mm. That's all I'm telling you.
Right.
And I think that's only the only message you should send. I think it's really horse, you know what. If a guy's great and he's hitting you and you hit him, why would you hit? I mean,
right, right.
I mean that's on you.
Right.
That's not on him.
You threw the pitch.
Yeah, get better. You know what I mean? So I always think it's bad to hit a guy because he's great. Now, pitching inside, you see the Dodgers have to do that to Tatis Jr. That's how you have to pitch Acuna.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get him out, you've got to make sure he doesn't get extended. And pitching inside is an art. And not everyone can do it.
Right. Now, you mentioned something earlier about Mark Vientos and coming, likely being activated tomorrow. If I don't know. You said he's going to be in a starting lineup. We don't know if he's going to be in the starting lineup.
No. So presumptuous.
Right. But there's a corresponding move that has to happen here. Ronnie Mauricio is a guy who is I don't say he's struggling to keep his spot here, but it feels like he's struggling to keep his spot here. You talk about turning on inside pitch. You saw that last night.
Yeah.
Young kid comes inside. He turns on it, barrels it, and throws it way in the back of the stadium. But what's going to happen if Mark Vientos comes back? Because there's some guys that need to play, and I think there's going to be some odd men out.
Yeah, I think the Mets are have really turned the corner on this. I think they make decisions based on how do we get the player ready and better for our stretch run. And if Mauricio goes down, it is not a slight. It's only because they need him. Mm-hmm. He has a chance of all their young players, and I know, you know, one of the things about organizations is they love to sell their young players.
Of course.
Mauricio is legit.
Mm.
You know, he hasn't played for a couple of years, but he is legit. He's got some skills that the other guys don't have. And if they're going to make a run, he's going to be a big part of it in August and September. So maybe in the short run, it's going to hurt his feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long run, it'll help him,
right,
and it'll help the organization.
Indeed. Ron, we appreciate you coming on, man. Thank
guys,
you very much.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You, Ron.
I appreciate it. Your show's great. Way
thank you, man. That was special. And the only thing that made it more special is that poor Howie Rose had to wait while that was going on. So joining us right now, the voice of the New York Mets. You hear him on the Odyssey Mets Radio Network, the great Howie Rose. Howie, how's it going?
Oh, that was worth the wait. Don't worry about it. Hope you're you have a good lawyer.
Hey, it has nothing to do with me. Didn't you hear the disclaimer?
No.
It is no opinions. Similar to mine.
I don't know. We're got sources that might indicate differently.
Watch out, Howie. Matt T's going to come back. There's going to be an AI bet, Howie.
I can see that happening.
AI, you realize AI will be the ruination of all of us.
Yes.
We're done.
We are done. No, and unfortunately, I think this Bad Tiki segment has sped up the eventual end of all of us because of AI.
Might as well get it over with. I'm not getting any younger.
What's your feeling on the state of the team? Obviously, recent funk. Hopefully, last night gets them out of it. They're still only a half game out of first place. Give me your state of the Mets feeling.
Look, the one overriding feeling I have right now is that you just can't keep asking your bullpen for 12 to 15 outs a night. It's not sustainable.
No.
And that's why guys are coming up and down literally every day.
Yeah.
Because you've got to have some fresh arms out there. But your starting pitchers have got to go deeper than they've been lately. I think they will. There's no reason to assume they won't. But it's certainly something that I think is going to influence how David Stearns approaches the deadline, which is a little over a month away. So, I mean, that's the first thing. You know, guys who generally hit should hit. I mean, obviously Soto was going to come around at some point. And I think, and he even talked about this last night, the warm weather has a lot to do with it.
Right.
There are some guys who just are not comfortable playing, and we had some lousy weather the first 2 months under those conditions. But obviously the lineup needs to lengthen a little bit. They expected more from Alvarez. Hopefully he's able to come back and provide some. Winker is getting close,
right,
which will provide. Yeah, exactly. So I think the plan for him is to DH Sunday for Brooklyn. And I don't think it's inconceivable that he'll be back before the All-Star break now and perhaps, you know, a week before the break.
You know, one of the issues that you bring up, especially with some of these guys getting healthy, Winker is one of them, and Mark Vientos is likely to be activated either tonight or tomorrow.
Tomorrow, probably.
So likely tomorrow. It creates an interesting roster decision. And Evan was talking about this earlier, but Ronnie Mauricio has been really good over the last couple of days. How do you think they're going to weigh the pros and cons of sending him up or down or someone else?
My feeling, and that's all this is not from talking to anyone, is that he's got to get at-bats because he's still playing catch-up.
Yeah.
He's young and he missed an entire year. And there have been some encouraging signs the last couple of nights would be the best indication. But I think even more so than where they were at with Acuna, because, you know, Acuna can impact a game several different ways, but he just wasn't getting enough at-bats. They had to get him playing every day down there. And it may well be that that's the decision that'll be made, because there are a couple of decisions coming, right? You've got the spot for Vientos and then a spot for Winker a little bit sooner perhaps than we thought, and that'll impact somebody else. So I think in their perfect world, they want Mauricio playing every day, but he can make that a more difficult decision even tonight. I don't know that they were set in stone before last night, but you know, he might have made a little case for himself last night.
The other guy who's quietly starting to hit again is Brett Baty. I don't know what to make of him. He's made such great progress at third base, where he's their best defensive option at third base, but he's been so inconsistent.
Right.
Like, what do you think of him right now?
That's a heck of a question, because it really is, because every time you think, and I've used the word on the air when he was hot a few weeks ago, he'd come up with a big hit here or there, and I'd get a little excited and say, we may be seeing the emergence of an everyday quality big league player here. And then, you know, in his defense, I guess it was his groin that he tweaked going after a foul ball, and that set him back a little bit. But there have been some encouraging signs from him this year. You have flexibility because of the DH spot between Baty and Vientos and Marte, and so we'll see how that shakes out. You know, I'd like to see Brett continue to take
that. You just mentioned Vientos again. Let's circle back to him, because he's going to come up, and I know Evan and I were talking about this yesterday, and Evan's stance is he's got to be that player that we saw at the end of the regular season and into the postseason, basically become a savior for what has been somewhat of a limp offense over the last couple of weeks. I don't know if I trust that, though. He's still a young player. He still hasn't had years of experience in understanding how to come back from injury and get right back into this. And he struggled before he went on the IL with that hamstring injury. So when you think about Mark Vientos, what should we expect from him?
Don't know. It's a great question, because you made the perfect point that, you know, at this stage of his career, and any young player who's on the path that he's been and had kind of a, you know, sort of parallel run of success early on, you can't trust it until you see more of it. And so what do? You play him as much as you can and hope that he comes around. Again, that impacts Baty. That impacts a DH spot. If Brett continues to hit and play, then maybe Mark's more often than not your right-handed DH. Now, what does that mean for Marte? That's another conversation. That's why all these things are swimming around, I think, in David Stern's mind.
We're talking to Howie Rose. Mets get set to wrap up this four-game series against the Braves. We have obviously seen a lot of Juan Soto over the years torturing the Mets as a member of the Nationals. Getting to watch him every day, what have you kind of appreciated about watching Juan Soto and learned about Juan Soto watching him every day?
I don't think I've learned anything about him, because we know, having seen him often enough over the years, that the best of Juan Soto is beyond elite. Where we're sitting right now is below the Coca-Cola corner here, which is the upper deck. And I don't know if you'd remember this, but one of the COVID years, I think it was the year nobody was here in 20, he had a home run to the back of the Coca-Cola corner, beyond the seats, you know, into the path, the walkway there in front of the kiosks. Yeah. And that's the kind of power he has. Again, people just want so much so soon without factoring in the human element. He was adjusting to a new environment, new teammates. Again, the weather wasn't great, not to make an excuse, but some guys just handle that better than others. And I think we're seeing the emergence of Juan Soto now. The one thing that surprised me that doesn't make any sense, and there'll probably be some evening out between now and the end of the season, is how can he possibly be hitting about 150 with men in scoring position?
Yeah, I don't get that.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't expect that to continue.
And it's a whole team thing. Like, usually when a team struggles with runners in scoring position, I try to be rational. I say, it'll change. Just keep getting guys on base. We're halfway through the season, and it hasn't really changed. Like, as a team, outside of Pete, a little bit of Marte and Torrens, like, everyone has produced kind of poorly with runners in scoring position. How do you make sense of it?
You don't, and you expect it to even out along the line. Doesn't mean it will.
Right.
But I think the smart money is that some of the guys who have struggled in that department are going to step it up. Certainly hope so, but there's no reason based on the back of their baseball cards to think that it won't.
Now, we talked about, you mentioned the bullpen. You can't have these guys getting 12 to 14 or 15 outs every single night, because guys aren't getting deep in the starting rotation. But it doesn't feel like that's also an easy solution. You know, Clay Holmes has never done this before, right? He's pitching way over his innings limit. And obviously, he was a reliever before. He's a starter. David Peterson doesn't have a long track record as well. Senga's hurt. The solution doesn't seem obvious. And you mentioned David Stearns at the trade deadline, but we also know that David Stearns is not an irresponsible trade deadliner. You know what I mean? So how does this get solved? Because I think it's got to be more than just, sorry, Clay Holmes, you got to go deeper. You got to do better. What if he can't?
No, that's not – you can only push so far before it becomes counterproductive, right? So in my mind right now, they probably feel they have had strength in numbers in the starting rotation. Now they've had half a season to assess what they have, what's coming back, and what they can expect from those coming back. You know what you can expect from Senga if he comes back healthy. But I don't think you can say the same thing about McGill. I don't know that you know what you can expect. I've always thought, and I know they've kind of toyed around with it too, especially because Tyler gets into situations where, you know, he loses command, starts walking people. Boy, that's an enticing arm to have going full throttle for an inning out of the bullpen.
Yeah. Right?
If he can be resilient enough to do it a few times a week, depending on what else shakes out as far as the starters go, if they get someone from outside the organization. I don't know that they're inclined to think about Jonah Tong or Nolan McLean, but they could be options that they explore just as a cameo before they get to the trade deadline. All of that stuff, I think, is on the table.
Let me ask you if this is on the table. Because last night, as I'm checking out that Jake is flirting with a no-hitter, and I'm secretly rooting against him doing it.
It's not going to happen.
You didn't have to ask the question. Is it not going to happen because Jake wouldn't waive his no-trade clause, or is it not going to happen because Texas won't do it, or the Mets won't do it?
Yes, yes, and yes.
All
okay. I don't know. It's
a Met fan thing more than it
gut is a feeling. As a gut feeling, and this is just me talking, I don't think Jake was thrilled the last year or two that he was here about being here for whatever reason.
Is that a Met thing or is that a New York thing?
I think
could have been a pandemic thing.
Right.
It's
a good point.
Yeah.
The last place you wanted to be during the pandemic was New York. It was probably as bad as anywhere.
Because he has a full no trade, would be surprised if he'd waive it. And that's if you can even consider a deal that would be made that would make sense because of the financial aspect of it. He's making a lot of money.
He is. No, he
and he's, you know, he's had two elbow surgeries. He's 37. And I don't know other than beyond the emotional level, because we've seen he's still pretty close to the top of his game. But when you ask, you know, can you trust a young guy who's unproven like Vientos to give him third base and run with it, can you trust that Jacob deGrom can stay healthy?
Probably not.
To make it a worthwhile. So you can't make it emotional, right?
Yeah. It's tough because if I blindly asked you, all right, Howie, you've watched this team forever, give me like the 5 or 10 most emotional moments you've had as a Met fan, you're probably going to tell me, oh, opening day 1983, Tom Seaver walking back through the bullpen. Yeah. That's probably up there, right? I want that, Howie. I want that moment. DeGrom coming back for us, the younger generation, that would be like,
God. History doesn't repeat itself.
They're totally different situations. Because with Tom, it wasn't about the money. The game was different financially, even though it was changing. But 1983 was a lot different than 2025 as far as the numbers are concerned. Tom was 38 going on 39, and I know there are a lot of people who weren't in favor of the move then. I was, for the same reason you're seriously. I was thrilled when they brought Tom back, because I was crazy enough to think, even after they traded him, and in the short aftermath after they traded him, I remember thinking and saying on the air when I was at WHM, I sounded like a dopey little kid, but I said, you know what? The Cincinnati Reds, who are a great team then, they're a small market. Those guys are getting old. They're going to want to move salary and contracts along the way. Tom Seaver's going to win his 300th game in New York. They're going to bring him back, and he's going to win his 300th game in New York. Well, they brought him back, and he won his 300th game in New York.
You're right.
But not the way it was supposed to.
No, it all got screwed up.
You know?
Yeah.
That didn't work the way it should have. But that was pure emotion. With Jake, there's too much money involved, too much risk involved for me. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it won't happen, but again, Jake's got to be the one who would sign off on that.
I'm skeptical that he would not come back. That's why I ask you. You broke the news to me in a very nice way, but yeah, it stinks. What about Pete? You think Pete's going to be a career Met? We asked him, and he sounds like he wants it. Right. I don't know if the Mets want it.
I've always felt, and this is no big revelation, he means more to the Mets than he does any other team,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I don't know about his mindset trying to regain some of which he might have felt he lost last winter.
You're talking money.
Yeah. He right. won't have the qualifying offer attached to him,
right.
which is an impediment that no longer exists. He's having a really good year, maybe even a career year by the time it's over, if he picks it back up. So then you ask the question, at what will be age 31 next year, what's the value? Is it over 3 years, or is it the 5 or 6 he'd probably like to get? I'd like to think there's a deal to be made there. He wants to be here. The fans want him here. I think the front office is suitably impressed with what he means to this organization. But, again, the business aspect is gonna rule, and we'll see. But I think all of the components are in place to make another deal.
I think one of the reasons Juan Soto got paid so much money is, one, he's a great player, and he was so young. But also, I mean, he's so marketable. Right? He's one of the faces of Major League Baseball. But from a local standpoint, Pete Alonso is kind of also that. Do you still
Absolutely.
Put stock in the milestone numbers that he likely will hit and what it means to be a Met when he does those
well,
things?
Well, I'll give you three things. I think that it means a lot to Pete, mm-hmm. in particular, to break Darryl Strawberry's franchise record, and I think he's 8 home runs away from tying him right now.
Yeah, he told Evan he was going to hit 3 of them for him tonight.
All right, beautiful. So that'll
bring cut down into it a little bit. Let's get this thing done.
That'll exactly expedite the
right.
that particular affair. So that's one. The other is, I think it would be wonderful to have a career-long Met. David Wright was a career-long Met, but he unfortunately left part of that career in a hospital right. or a doctor's office or whatever. I mean, unfortunately. With Pete, there's the chance not only to be a career Met, but if he is, he could be the first Met to hit 500 home runs as a Met.
Yeah.
Gary Sheffield hit his 500th
yeah.
as a Met.
Yeah, we don't count that.
No. No. So I think for those three reasons, they tie together emotionally. It's part of what makes Pete so special to the Mets, the fans, their organization.
Right.
I think there's a deal to be made there, and I think those are three reasons why.
It makes sense. Let's hope so from Mets fans' perspective. Let me flip to the Skip. So last year, save for the bullpen issues at the beginning of the year, which ultimately worked themselves out and they ended up getting to the NLCS, it felt like Mindy handled his rookie season as a manager with aplomb. I mean, it felt he had every answer. He was great with the media, made every right decision, and ultimately they had a really long run in the postseason. Year two, it's a little bit more challenging. Right, and I'm not saying there's more scrutiny, but you're going through a streak, or at least a losing streak over the last couple of weeks. It's been rough. Evan and I were talking about our flag levels. Is it yellow? Is it red? And for me, it was a little bit red because he started calling out his players a little bit. And once you start doing that, if it doesn't work, what do you do next? So, what do you think about Mindy's handling of some of this not early, but mid-season adversity?
Well, when you say calling out a player, give me one or two that stick in you.
Well, he didn't call out anyone specifically. He basically said the guys have to start playing better. And usually you don't hear that.
You would
never hear Aaron Boone say
if,
that.
If Bill Parcells said mm-hmm. that, and or Tom Coughlin, would you take offense to that?
Well, it's different because in football, you can just play harder. Right, I can hit that guy harder than I did the week before, or toughness matters. Whereas in baseball, it's like golf: the harder you try, sometimes the worse you get.
Well,
you know what I mean? And so, creating an emotional, like you better, doesn't really work. You know what I mean?
I haven't seen any signs that the players have lost any faith in him. Let's put it that way. And I think it's refreshing when a manager steps away from what's expected with regard to giving vanilla answers mm-hmm. or being intentionally bland. Because as long as he's not embarrassing a player,
right?
You know, like for example, and this isn't about Mendy now, This is just my own opinion. A couple days ago, O'Neill Cruz in Pittsburgh made an indifferent play going after a base hit. He played it off to the side instead of getting in front of it. Anyway, went off his glove, rolled behind him. He couldn't be bothered to even turn around and think about chasing after it. That was bad enough. If I'm Don Kelly, I get him out of the game right there. But he didn't. And then the other night, he hits into a double play, and he's running half-hearted down the line. Kelly finally pulled him out. You know, I would think that most players would support the manager in a situation like that because, hey, now his behavior or his demeanor is impacting the rest of us. And I think that's when a manager has a right to single out a player. But nowadays, you know, with social media being as prevalent and powerful, unfortunately, as it is, every little thing is magnified in a way that we used to think we magnified it on talk radio. Yeah. That's nothing compared to today.
Yeah.
So I think a manager's got to be careful. I think he's got to at times be circumspect. I think at other times he's got to be able to drop the hammer and let the players know he's willing to do it. But there's also a consistency that needs to be there so that they know who they're dealing with. And Carlos has been that from day one spring training last year. And I think players appreciate that.
Do you think the Mets win the NL East? And also, does it matter if they win the NL East?
To me, it does.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one reason why, having lived it last year, is that they end the regular season on the road with a week-long trip. They're in Chicago and then Miami and then the postseason. And if you've got a chance to win the division, and at the very least, depending on which seed, play your first series at home, never mind getting the potential bye, which would be fine, too. And the way their bullpen is used, believe me, they can certainly use up to a week off if it comes down to that. Yeah, I think first place is of urgent importance this year. Can they? Talk to me on about August 10th, because the roster as it's presented today, and the same goes for the Phillies, is going to be different from post-trade deadline.
I agree with you. I still think the winning the division matters. I think because of the first few years of this new format, we've seen so many teams get knocked out in the division series. It's created this false belief of, it doesn't matter. Just make the playoffs. Sure, you can go on a run, but it's just easier if you win the division.
Right. The Mets last year were on the road literally two full weeks at the end of the season, including the postseason. They were one big swing away from going out in three games and being done within a week. But, you know, what happened and how just about magical the run was, it's asking a lot to duplicate that. So, winning the division would be of, to me, utmost urgency and significance.
I didn't even think about the end of the regular season, what it means, especially if you don't win the division and then you're on the road again.
A lot of traveling.
A lot of traveling.
That's a lot.
2 full weeks.
Howie, we appreciate it, man. Thank you very much for coming on. The voice of the New York Mets here on the radio.
Thank you.
The great Howie Rose.
It's not me. It's bad TV. Anyway, I made Dexter Henry stay in here. Dexter Henry is a Brooklynite and a basketball fan, and he hosts the Got Game show on SNY and other things on SNY. But we were having a conversation about the Brooklyn Nets where I'm like, we're about to have the same conversation. So actually, let's take this call from Isaiah in Westfield, and then Dex will weigh in with us as well. What's up, Isaiah? You're on the Fan.
Hey, Keith. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I don't even know what to say after last night. I mean, Sean Marks picking Igor Demin with the 8th pick, I fully believe, may be the reason why he gets fired next year. I mean, a guy who scores under 30% from the 3-point line, quite literally only gets to the rim, and has Cam Thomas to the next of him, but he still won't be able to produce because of how clogged our guard game is. There was no reason to take 4 other guards in this draft. I mean, I liked Kaman Malawach at 8, and we just end up blowing up this team, and I feel like this is just tanking us and bringing us back to 2015 Nets.
Stay with me here, Isaiah. So I was just having this conversation with Dex about how the Brooklyn Nets sure know how to let their fans down. They had a prime opportunity here with 5 picks in the draft to just take the best player available. But I think they overthought it. I think that they were on
some type of wild goose chase for their next point guard, or also to satisfy some type of international scouting that they did. And like I'm trying to put the pieces together, but right now it doesn't make sense. I'm reserving judgment because maybe it pans out. But as of today, after all of the hype of like, oh, they took on Terrence Mann's contract, they got another pick, Sean Marks is cooking. Like, he cooked a bunch of hot garbage that no Brooklyn Nets fan wants to eat.
Yeah, none of the Nets fans, you know, I was saying I did a live show last night. No Nets fans seem happy about this, just like the caller we just heard. Nobody seems thrilled about this at all whatsoever.
It doesn't make sense. It's underwhelming.
I think the problem is they took all these guards, three-point guards, four guards overall, if you count the UNC kid. But a lot of these guys can't shoot. Good playmakers, but can't shoot. Right?
Demon drafted 10 Ben Simmonses.
Right. That's been kind of the joke. Demon at BYU, great playmaker, probably the best passer in the draft, but didn't have the ability to get to the rim and get past guys. Look, I'm not a big guy who harps on, oh, you have to have athleticism. It's about being able to get to your spots and can you playmake. But here's what I'll say, and I know you have this concern. We were talking about this. A lot is riding on this draft for Sean Marks.
It's supposed to be a generational draft. It's supposed to be a franchise-altering draft. They made history being the first team with five picks. What I just said to you is if 3 out of 5 don't pan out, that's a problem.
But I don't even know if they should have took the 5 picks, Keith, if I'm being honest.
They probably wanted to trade up, like you said, with Philly. That's what we were all thinking, to get that 3 spot.
I've been hearing they had conversations there, and I thought they would try to kick one of the later picks, 26 or 27, back to get another pick next year, because the Nets only have one next year. But you thought they'd try to get an extra pick there. They don't even do that. And I understand why the fan base is disappointed. Now, look, you don't know how these guys are going to pan out. Anybody tells you they know for sure, I don't know. I think what the fan base is hurting on is it seems like it's a bit of redundancy. And there are point guards you got who couldn't shoot, so now you got to develop all those guys. Because what good is a point guard in this league today in the NBA if you can't shoot?
Isaiah, do you agree with that, being a Nets fan? How did you feel after it was all said and done versus how you felt going into the Brooklyn Nets hosting the draft? And literally, like, they're getting grades of an F. Like, Wendy is laughing at the Nets. You hosted the draft. You had all these picks in the draft, and you somehow seem to have found a way to be underwhelming. I won't say screw it up, but, like, you did not win. It does not seem like you won the draft.
I mean, I feel disappointed. I feel let down going into the draft. 5 first-round picks. I thought at least one would hit, and we take a project pick with every single one. I feel like Sean Marks just doing that and having the entire NBA laugh at him let down us. It let down the franchise. It let down Brooklyn. It let down New York.
Thanks for the call, Isaiah. What I'll say is this: the clips of them, it was odd because I was watching, like, they were celebrating these picks. And so what I was telling people is they got exactly who they wanted. They had a draft board. They had guys on their board. Their board didn't match other teams and other scouts. But that's why they're getting laughed at, because other scouts are like, we didn't have the same grade for these guys. And they're high-fiving and celebrating. Like, they just altered the franchise and brought themselves back to prominence.
Here's my question for you, Keith. And I asked somebody this who's a fellow Nets fan this last night. Any team, they're going to have their board in the way they have it. They're not going to all be equivalent, right? And so we can agree with that. But do you, as a Nets fan, do you trust Sean Marks?
Nah.
With this going? So you said, nah. That was real easy for you.
I said he's got 9 lives. I feel like he could have been fired so many times. And so now this is your 10th life. And, like, I went to one Nets game last year. I went to more Devils games than I went to Nets games, which
I've never seen that from you. I see you at the Barclays.
I used to be there all the time. I used to be there. It could be back to back. I used to hop because it was easy to hop the train. I used to be there, do the show with. It doesn't matter, man. I'm so disappointed. I used to put on the headset with Capper and Carino, do the show, watch the game, get on the train, come here, host the show after the Nets games. I have no time for that. I have no energy for that because they've been so in flux and I have no idea the direction of the franchise or what they're actually doing here. And this did not instill any more confidence. If anything,
it took us another step back. So we'll see what happens with these kids, man.
We'll see. I think the fact that you don't have confidence in Sean Marks, and I'm hearing that from a lot of Nets fans, and you said he's got nine lives, and there's some argument he shouldn't have gotten to hire another coach as he did again. I do think the Nets have a coach in Jordy Fernandez.
They hired the right guy, it seems.
Right, and I think you have to believe, if you have one thing, and I'll say this before I run, is that you got to have some faith that he can develop these guys, but that's a tall ask, asking a coach to develop all these guys in a short period of time.
And that's the thing, Dex. Yeah. You're a Knicks fan. The mm-hmm. Knicks aren't going anywhere. And like what we saw in this city with the Knicks just getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, I was in Barclays in 2015. Mm-hmm. In the years they went to the playoffs, they always felt like, oh, we're in the playoffs. They're not. Oh, we're the only ticket in town.
That was the regular season. Sure.
Like their energy was like, we're the second team, we're the B team, but at least we're winning. We are playoffs was their slogan in 2015. I was there in 2013 when they played the Bulls. Like their whole thing was like, Brooklyn, we're here, we're cooler, we're trendy, they're losers. But like now, like they've been had 90-95% of the fans, but like they're gonna potentially wash you with these young fans. You had a little bit of a buzz with KD, Kyrie, and that is getting washed away as Brunson and Mikal Bridges and Karl Anthony Towns and whoever they hire, and like the Knicks potentially go to the finals next year, the Nets have to find some way to compete and get back to relevance, or like they're doomed for the next decade.
And when you say that, and I think listeners who hear you say that, I think part of what that means, even for you, and I think what will get you back to the Barclays Center is there somebody on this team I can go and root for? Even if you know they're going to be bad and they're rebuilding, what is bringing you out to the Barclays Center right now? Well, clearly nothing, because you said no.
Nothing. Cam Thomas was hurt all year.
Right.
They played so many guys, and we thought they were tanking this year. They couldn't do that correctly. Again, what is the vision? What is the plan? Are they making it up as they go?
I know this. They want to tank this year. They want to be bad. They want to get a higher pick because they're trying to land that guy. But I think that's the part. That's what you were saying, what so many fans are saying was disappointing. They didn't get a guy here that I think the fans could get behind. Again, I'm saying we all don't know. They could hit on one of these guys. Maybe it's Traore. I have no idea. But I understand why when you look at these guys' body of work or the redundancy, I understand why the fan base in Brooklyn is just like, ah.
I feel like they wasted some picks. I feel like at least three of these five picks are going to be wasted. And we're going to be like, you had an opportunity to add some real talent. And what I was selling folks on was, hey, this is their chance to rebuild. We're looking at all these teams. Look at the Boston Celtics and the moves that they're making right now to get under the apron and how, it's over. They won one chip out of it, but it's over for them. Sam Presti, the way that he did it and what he said was shortcuts cut long, run short.
Yep.
So I'm thinking that they're doing this the right way. They're going to draft talent. They're going to draft multiple positions and the best talent available. And then they're not going to have to pay these kids. Like, they're going to have a team. I think they swung at one position too much. I think that they overdrafted some guys. I think that they got really stuck into their board. And there's just one, not room for all these guys. And there's just a higher percentage chance that three out of five don't pan out. And that's not going to be good enough.
I agree with you on this point. This draft is going to be, and it shouldn't come down to this, but it's because he took five picks. It could be sink or swim. This could make or break the future for Sean Marks because he almost has to hit. And when I say hit, I'm going to be very clear to people. If you take five picks in a draft, which has never been done before, you got to hope at least one is an all-star, borderline all-star at a minimum. And two of those other guys can be rotation players. If you do that, that's a very successful draft. We'll see.
Yeah.
You don't know how good a draft is for 2 to 3 years, but what happens in the next year is going to be very interesting. I'm going to be checking in on you, Keith. I'm going to see if you get to the Barclays Center next year.
I got no reason to go. I'm not watching them get smoked. Like, I want to go see them compete. I was going when it's like, yo, Steph Curry is coming to town. LeBron is coming to town. Giannis is coming to town. We're on TNT. We're on ESPN. The stars are out. You know what I'm saying? Meek Mill in the building. Wale in the building. Cam Newton in the building. I'm seeing these guys downstairs. Like the Barclays
had
it for a minute.
To be fair to you, even when they were going through a little bit of a rebuilding process, when you felt like there was a plan, you were still showing up. And you've done a lot of content around the net. So I've seen that from you, right? It's not like you're just like, ah, man, this is a rough time. I'm not here. That's not the case. But I understand what you're saying. If you don't see the hope,
Yeah, there's no.
That's your right as a fan.
There's no market for it. Like I not for nothing. Like I had a Nets podcast that a lot of people are like, "Yo, bring the podcast back, talking Nets." I'm like, "There's nothing to talk about.
Damn,
not fun,
man.
This is not a conversation that is going to move podcast downloads. This isn't a conversation that's going to have a live chat of people like, yeah, you know."
I understand. That's what I'm saying. I understand the frustration. I hear you. I hear you, brother. Like I understand. Keep the faith, man. I hope to see you back at the Barclays Center.
Dexter Henry, my guy. It's quiet for the Brooklyn Nets. 888-808-1019. Yeah, we might as well. We'll talk Knicks with Rami.
I was just going to ask Dexter what he thought about the Knicks at 50.
Is that pick coming up right now? Is that pick on the clock coming up? Let's see the draft board right now. Sacramento Kings are on the clock at 42.
I like Kobe Brea, if they could get him from Kentucky.
He just got drafted. He just went.
Oh, dude, who took him?
41.
I had a feeling he was going to get that high.
He just got picked as you walked out.
He would go that high. Okay, you know who else I liked? Micah Peavy from Georgetown, I think, is a decent option there. And I talked about this today in a video. Jameer Watkins from Florida State. Any of those options I would like. But Brea could shoot, can't defend.
He went to Phoenix.
Well, they don't know what they're doing. So who knows? All right, guys, I got to run.
All right, do your thing. Appreciate you. 888-808-1019 if any.